Journalist Robert Draper was given unprecedented FaceTime with President Bush back in 2006 for what turned out to be his biography called Dead Certain, The Presidency of George W. Bush. In the second part of our interview, WMNF asked Draper about Bush's second term in office, which went south quickly by the president's lack of immediate action in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, and became further damaged in the wake of the Harriet Myers debacle, which ended with Myers withdrawing her name from consideration as a Supreme Court justice.
So a couple of different things. One, that the president had not yet suffered from any confrontation with the conservative base. And I think he believed that they would be in lockstep with him, that they would trust him when he said, believe me, Harriet Myers is going to be a conservative jurist. You got nothing to be afraid of with her. But what he failed to recognize was that the conservative base had believed that there were plenty of other bona fide conservative judges who'd been in line for this job, and that it was smart to go for one of them rather than just to pick one of Bush's loyalists. The second thing was that the individual who would have been best equipped to point this out to the president was Karl Rove, who had his finger on the pulse of the base. But Rove's wings had been clipped as a result of the Plamegate matter and his insistence to George W. Bush, which he later had to walk back from, that he didn't know anything about and didn't have anything to do about the leak of Valerie Plame's name as a CIA agent. And so he was out of favor with Bush at that point, couldn't really fight the good fight on Harriet Myers, and very quickly instead fell in step with Bush when he would have been in an ideal position to explain to him how this was not going to play with the base.
We're speaking with Robert Draper. He's the author of the book Dead Certain, The Presidency of George W. Bush, just published in paperback. And Robert Draper, another incident which had some people scratching their heads was the day after the election in 2006, congressional elections, when the Democrats took back the House and the Senate. And right after that, President Bush announced that Donald Rumsfeld was leaving as Secretary of Defense. Of course, Rumsfeld, a huge controversial figure for several years because of what had been going on in the Iraq War. And in the book, you write that back in April of 2006, with 11 of his closest advisors, the president asked for a showing of hands about whether Rummy should go or not. And a majority said yes. But in fact, why didn't that happen then?
Well, because, yeah, Bush was in the minority. He was among the four who voted for keeping Rumsfeld, but his was the only voice that counted. And he was voting that way for, I think, a few different reasons. One, he actually liked Rumsfeld. Secondly, the so-called generals revolt was taking place during this time. A number of retired generals were coming out saying Rumsfeld needs to be given the gate. And this really angered Bush, who told me that his reaction was no retired general is going to tell a civilian commander-in-chief how to run the country. On top of this, the midterm elections were coming up soon, and he did not want this to appear to be a politicized decision. So he hung on to Rumsfeld, and as my book discloses, did not actually plan on replacing Rumsfeld until 48 hours before the midterm election, when he brought Robert Gates in to do a lengthy interview. Gates was the only person who Bush had under consideration as Rumsfeld's replacement. There was no number two. There was no plan B. And in fact, though Bush's advisors had been telling him for months that they really thought Rumsfeld needed to go, Bush was insistent that this not be the case until finally he said, look, I'll only consider it if you can come up with a decent replacement for me. When that person turned out to be Gates, when the interview went well, then and only then, the Sunday before the Tuesday election, did Bush acquiesce.
I want to ask you about some of the personality of George W. Bush. Of course, Bush used to be a runner, and then, of course, he had some issues with his knees, and so he had to become a bicyclist, which we all know he's pretty passionate about. And you write about in your book how when he'd go on a trip, whether domestic or foreign, the Secret Service would devote inordinate energy to satisfying Bush's needs for biking trails, focusing on secluded hotels away from downtown, properties that they could fully take over, and ones with the kind of trails the boss would find challenging. I think everybody thinks it's great that a man, our president's in good shape and working out and the like, but he seems to take it to a different level.
Well, yeah, to the degree that taxpayer dollars have been devoted to building biking trails out at the Secret Service Academy in Maryland and out at his property in Crawford. Now, you could argue that, look, it's good for the president to be fit, and besides, this is not a guy who's obsessed with chasing women or who drinks, and so this is, by comparison, a healthy obsession, but an obsession it remains all the same. And indeed, as the book details, they had to basically develop a whole new cadre of Secret Service agents who were capable of keeping up with Bush the bicyclist, and did, as you mentioned, have to spend an awful lot of time planning out their trips in accordance with Bush's bike riding passions.
Robert Draper, last question for you. Here we are in a campaign presidential season right now. Democratic candidate Barack Obama, a lot of people say he doesn't have the experience. George W. Bush was elected and then reelected as governor of Texas. But as you write, and which has been written about in other places too, George Bush did not necessarily have the most distinguished career before he became governor or president.
No, that's true. He'd run for Congress in 1978 and lost. He had been an advisor to his dad, so he had some sense of what the machinations were like on the campaign trail and in the White House. And he'd run a business, the Texas Rangers, though he was really more of a cheerleader, the kind of in-house fan-in-chief of the Texas Rangers than he was a guy who did a whole lot of hands-on decisions. He had a fair amount of management experience as governor, but no foreign policy experience other than dealings that he'd had with the Mexican government. And so, you know, I think that voters, as they consider the crop of candidates, which is now down to three for 2008, have to wrestle with these questions of experience and judgment. And I think that for a lot of people, the question of experience will boil down to what kind of experience and how far does that experience get you. I think that George W. Bush is in a very, very unique position as the son of a president and the son of a vice president, and so by osmosis could pick up a few things. But it's clear at the same time that he came to the White House in January 2001 as a guy who didn't have a strong breadth of history, didn't know much about foreign policy, and had to lean very heavily, as it turned out, as foreign policy came front and center after 9/11.